Srila Prabhupada ki, Shri Bhakti Vedanta ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Jai Nitai Go Premanande. Okay, so tonight we'll do chapter 45. We'll go from verses 1 to 24. And tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter 45. Next Tuesday we'll have the overview of the chapters, the third section that we've studied this year. And the following Tuesday we'll have the closed book exam. The date is, I think it might be the 9th. Anyone got the calendar?
Then
10th. The Tuesday is the 10th. The Tuesday is the 10th. Then the exam is on the 10th. And on the 3rd, which will be next Tuesday, we'll have the closed book exam. So that means your open book exams, your open book topics are due by the 3rd, which is next week. And your oral presentation should be completed by that date as well. What's that?
Covering chapter 45
and 46. Yeah, next Monday we'll do the first half of 46. Then on the Tuesday we'll do the overview. On the Monday following we'll do the second half, and then we'll do 46 is a very important chapter, so try not to miss. That's a very important chapter. Okay, at the end of 46 then we will do, tonight we'll do chapter 45 verses 1 to 24. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.
Feeling all right?
No.
Not yet. Yeah. Takes 2 weeks.
Yeah, it takes 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't know where I got it from. I'm very angry whoever gave it to me. Okay, so tonight verses 1 to 24. Shukadeva Goswami said, understanding that his parents were becoming aware of his transcendental opulences, the Supreme Personality of Godhead thought that this should not be allowed to happen. Thus he expanded his yogamaya, which bewilders his devotees.
Vasudeva and Devaki have seen Krishna as how much he goes, their intense love for him as their son Brahmin spoiled. Lord Krishna did not know this. Rather, the Lord wanted to enjoy with them the ecstasy love of Vatsalya Rasa, the relationship between parents and children. As Srila Prabhupada often pointed out, although we normally think of God as the Supreme Father, in Krishna consciousness, we can enter into the Lord's pastime and play the part of his parents, thus intensifying our love for him.
Nice. Did you read both purposes?
One more. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur points out that the word jana may be translated here as devotees, as in the verse Dhyamananda Vignanti. He further explained that jana may also be translated as parents, since jana is derived from the verb jan, which in the causative form janayate means to generate or to give birth to. In this sense of word, as janani or janako, the term jana mohini indicates that the Lord goes to expand his internal illusory potency so that Vasudeva and Devaki would again love him as their dear child.
Nice. So, any points there?
But they all knew that he is their son.
Not exactly. Any other points?
Krishna, your Maya presence is so powerful. All the time in his pastimes, your Maya is coming in.
Good. Anything else?
Lord wants the basic and positive to enjoy parental love.
Yeah.
Because he relishes it too.
Yeah.
We see the difference between Mathura Bhav and Vrindavan Bhav. Even though Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda or Cowper boys, elderly houses, people, we see Krishna and Balaram achievable feats like lifting the Govardhan or killing the demons, but their Vatsalya would never be overcome. But in this particular case, because the Abhiyan Mathura Bhav is mixed with Aishwarya, so it can easily overcome the Vatsalya.
Good. Anything else?
Devaki and Vasudeva, they wanted to have Krishna as their sannidhya in the material world. They wanted to be always in the material world and enjoy the Vasudeva Rasa Tala. But they overcome that and they bewildered now because of the problem.
So the integral point is that Yogamaya needed to act because Devaki and Vasudeva seeing Krishna as the Supreme Lord, and because of seeing him that way, Yogamaya needs to cover them in order for them to experience Vatsalya Bhav. So Krishna has three potencies. What are the three potencies of Krishna, the principal ones? Padini?
Sambit.
Sandini. Okay. So, eternality, knowledge, and bliss. So first of all, you have eternality. Out of the three, which is the most important?
Padini.
Then?
Sambit.
Yeah, and then Sandini. So first of all, you have Sandini, which means eternality. Who controls Sandini? Shakti. Balaram, very good. Yeah, Lord Balaram, he controls Sandini. Sandini means? Eternality, yeah. Eternality, that is controlled by Balaram. The entire spiritual world is made of Sandini Shakti. Sandini Shakti means eternality. Everything is eternal there. All that potency comes from Lord Balaram. So by his potency, he expands the spiritual world. Vrindavan Dham, Prabhupada explains, Krishna's flute, Krishna's crown, Krishna's bed, his seat, all his paraphernalia, his chapel, everything. That is all expanded from Balaram Shakti, which is Sandini Shakti. Then you have Samvit Shakti. Samvit Shakti means?
Knowledge.
It means knowledge acquiring potency. Who controls that potency? Who? Krishna gives it over to someone. Who controls it? Krishna doesn't do much. You have to understand this. If you're the boss, do you work? Right? Krishna doesn't do much. You have to understand this point. He just enjoys his pastimes. But who controls...
Sarasati?
Yeah, but more specifically?
Yogamaya.
Yeah, good. Yogamaya. Yeah. Yogamaya controls Samvit Shakti. And Yogamaya is personified as?
Purnamasi.
Purnamasi means she is the elderly gopi in Vrindavan. She's the grandmother of? Madhumangala. And the mother of?
Sandipani
Muni. Yeah. Who actually, in this chapter, Krishna will go to the ashram of? Sandipani Muni. So she's like an elderly gopi. She's described in Radha Krishna Ganadesh Deepika, that she is white, she wears white cloth, like an old sattu, white cloth, he has white hair, and she's very ancient and very wise, and everyone in Vrindavan listens to her. They all go to her for advice. She's like the guru in Vrindavan. So she controls Sambit Shakti. Yogamaya allows Krishna to understand everything by his yoga maya potency. It's like his supreme potency. where he can understand everything in the spiritual world. He knows every single detail by the influence of the Yogamaya potency. So here, in order for Krishna to cover Vasudeva and Devaki, he needs Yogamaya to act, to cover. And then you have Hladini. Hladini means?
Bliss.
Very good. Right. And the controller of bliss is Radharani. So bliss is the most important feature of the spiritual world. Same as our life. Right? Everyone is after happiness, bliss, ananda. Right? If there's no bliss, there's no reason to live.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not happy, what is the reason to exist? Why do we exist if we're not happy? Hands up if you're happy. One person. Right. Two. The rest of you aren't happy? Right. Half. Okay. What about Ananda? Who is full of bliss? Anyone full of bliss? You should be. Because the nature of the soul is to be blissful. So if you're not blissful, that means you're not in contact sufficiently with the spiritual energy. Mahatmanas, tumam parita, devim prakriti mashrita. Ashrita means, ashraya means devi prakriti. It means we should be embedded within the devi prakriti. So it is only 2 weeks until Kartik begins. So you should already be meditating. How do I more deeply enter into the Hladini Shakti? Into the internal potency, the Devi Prakriti. Fully absorb yourself in bhakti yoga, in devotional service. And if you're fully absorbed in devotional service, you will be blissful. If you're not blissful, it just means you're not sufficiently engaged in devotional service. That's all it means. You should be feeling blissful all the time. If we're not, then that just means we're inadequately or improperly engaged in devotional service. Ahoituki apatihata. Yayatma supersedeti. Ahoituki means if the motivations are pure, why are you doing devotional service? You're doing devotional service for Krishna's pleasure. And apratihata means without interruption. You get up in the morning until you go to bed, you're doing service to Krishna. Then you'll feel satisfied, you'll feel blissful. Otherwise, if we're not feeling blissful, it just means we're not performing devotional service properly or enough. So that is the nature of the soul. Hladini Shakti. Radharani controls this. Radharani gives bliss to everyone in Vrindavan, and she is the person who gives the most bliss to Krishna himself. She's so powerful that she controls Krishna's bliss. How much bliss Krishna can get, that's under Radharani's control. That's how powerful she is. So we cannot estimate the power of Srimati Radharani. She is Krishna's supreme Shakti. His energy, Hladini Shakti. It's the most important feature of the spiritual world, of Krishna's potencies. So, Yogamaya needs to cover Vasudeva and Devaki. Because Vasudeva and Devaki, they are unable to see Krishna at this point in time. Now, Mahamaya is the expansion of
Yogamaya.
Where does Mahamaya come from? Yogamaya, right? So Yogamaya, she gives the devotee the ability to come to Krishna, or she brings everyone closer to Krishna. Mahamaya, she keeps everyone away from Krishna. She's the expansion of Yogamaya. In the Navadvipa Dharma Mahatmya, there's that conversation where Yogamaya Devi. Mahamaya, Durga, she comes to Krishna and she says, why have I got this service? My service is to bring all the devotees away from you. Krishna says, yes, that is true, but your original form is in the spiritual world. You are Yogamaya, and your service is to bring everyone closer to Krishna. So that is Yogamaya's function. So we see here in the Bhagavatam that Vasudeva and Devaki, there is a distance between them and Krishna and Balaram. Krishna and Balaram are in front of them, but they cannot emote, or they cannot give satisfaction to Krishna and Balaram by their feelings. So therefore, Krishna, then he calls Yogamaya, cover them, yeah, so they can come closer to me, so they can just feel I am their son, Balaram is their son, and then they can act appropriately. Yeah, so that's what's taking place in this pastime. So, any points?
Does Mahamaya indirectly engage
us
the
service of the Lord? Mahamaya? Indirectly.
Giving us misery and
then giving us affection of Krishna. Yeah. You should offer obeisances to her. Okay. Lord Krishna, the greatest of the Satvatas, approached his parents with his elder brother, humbly bowing his head and gratifying them by respectfully addressing them as my dear mother and my dear father. Krishna spoke as follows. Lord Krishna said, Dear father, because of us, your two sons, you and Mother Devaki, always remained in anxiety and could never enjoy our childhood, boyhood, or youth. So, Nila Gopi, you like to read them?
Srila Vishnu Chakravarti, this verse as follows. One may object that at this point Lord Krishna had not actually passed the Kaishora stage. Since the woman of Mundura stated, Krishna and Balarama have very tender limbs. Being still at the Kishora stage, not having reached adulthood. The definition of the different stages of growing up is given as follows. The Kaumara state lasts until the age of 5, Pauganda up to age 10, and Kishora to age 15. From then on, one is known as Yavana. According to the statement, the Kishora period ends at the age of 15. Krishna was only 11 years old when he killed Kamsa. According to Uddhava's words, like a coward flame, Lord Krishna remained, incognito with Balarama for 11 years. And since Krishna and Balarama never took Brahminical initiation in Rajabhumi, it was at the time of their going to Mathura that the Kishora stage began rather than ended. This objection to Lord Krishna's statement in the present verse that his parents could not enjoy his Kishora stage is based on the ordinary measurement of age. Yet, we should consider the following statement from Bhagavata. O King Parikshit, within a short time, Rama and Krishna began to walk very easily in Gokula by their own strength without the need to crawl. Sometimes, we see that the son of king, even while in his powerful stage of life, undergoes exceptional physical growth and exhibits activities appropriate to Kaishora. Then what to speak of Lord Krishna, whose exceptional growth is established in the Vaishnava Toshari, Bhakti Samhita Sindhu, Anantha Vrindavana Champu, and other works. The 3 years and 4 months that the Lord Krishna stayed in Mahavana were the equivalent of 5 years for an ordinary child. And thus, in that period, he completed his common aspect of childhood. The period from then to the age of 6 years and 8 months, during which he lived in Vrindavana, constitutes his Pauganda stage. And the period from the age of 6 years and 8 months through his 10th year, during which time he lived in Vaneshwara and Andhakrama, constitutes his Kishora stage. Then, at the age of 10 years and 7 months, on the 11th lunar day of the half fortnight of the moon, Chaitra, he went to Varna, and on the 14th day thereafter, he killed Kamsa. Thus, he completed his Kishora period at the age of 10, at age 10, and he eternally remains at that age. In other words, we should understand that from this point on, the Lord remains forever as Kishora. Thus, here of this one, everyone shall remember this, the intricacies of this one.
Any points? What's there to be confused about? There's nothing confusing here. I'll explain a little. So, any other point?
Krishna already remains young and never gets old.
Yeah. So his eternal form is Navikishore, Navayovana. Well, this is described in Brahma Samhita. Puranam Purusham Navayovanam Cha. So Krishna is always youthful. So it's called Kaishora. Kaishora means 15, 16. That's as old as Krishna gets. Okay. So in the spiritual world, he always appears at that age. 15, 16 year old youth. At the prime of youth. In the spiritual world, if the devotees have a different feeling, like if they are experiencing Vatsalya Bhav, then Krishna will appear like a Kalmara. Kalmara means, up to 5 years old. If that's how the devotee is feeling, then Krishna appears like that. Then if the cowherd boys, because at Kalmara, up until the age of five, then the principal rasa is Vatsalya Rasa. So then Krishna is like a young boy. And then Sakya Rasa is primarily in Palganda age, between 5 and 10. So if the cowherd boys have that bhava, then Krishna will appear at that age. And then the gopis primarily see Krishna as Kaishora, which means 10 to 15, which means a 15-year-old, because it describes either Krishna is always half his age more. So even though he'd been on the earth for 10 years, when he entered into Mathura, apparently as a 10-year-old, he's actually looking like a 15, 16-year-old. So great souls, they age 1.5 times their natural age. So Krishna, to the gopis, he always appears to be Kaishora, which means like 15, 16-year-old. In the spiritual world, his eternal form, Krishna's eternal swarupa, is Kaishora. He'll just change his form if the devotees have a different bhava, but actually that's his eternal form. And when he goes to, Dwarka, which will come up, as Krishna gets older, then Krishna will appear like 25 maximum. Yeah, 25 means like a young man. How old are you now? 23. So you're like that. 23, 24, 25. And Krishna will never go beyond that age bracket, because that is Navayovana, means eternally youthful. So he always stays at that level. Send me a text. I was supposed to bring that Krishna Sangati. Last week I was sick, so I didn't bring it. I'll bring it tomorrow night. And then I'll read you some descriptions of Krishna when he leaves Vrindavan, how many times he comes back, and when he comes back, and how he comes back. In the Bhagavatam, it doesn't actually mention that he comes back. But actually, Krishna comes back many times. In the pastimes while he's here, he comes back to Vrindavan again and again, from Mathura and also from Dwarka.
They say he never leaves.
Yeah, we know that. These are complicated subject matters. So. Yeah. Any points?
So it says he never took Brahmin initiation in Vrindavan, it said in the Bhagavad. So is it because Vaishyas don't do the Brahmin initiation that affects him?
No, they do. Shudras don't. But Vaishyas, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas are twice born, Dvija.
So, just that because he had not reached that age, that's why Nandanarayan never performed, that he wanted Vasudev to have that privilege.
Probably the age. Only 10. 10's quite young. So, he needed to go for training in the Gurukula. Anything else? Okay. Yep.
When he's yoga, what is there a ras there?
Is there a kishora? It's kishora. It means when he's 16. 16 and 25 doesn't make any difference. He feels the same.
Still
the same. Yeah, it's all the same. Deprived by fate, we could not live with you and enjoy the pampered happiness most children enjoy in their parents' home. With one's body, one can acquire all goals of life, and it is one's parents who give the body birth and sustenance. Therefore, no mortal man can repay his debt to his parents, even if he serves them for a full lifetime of 100 years. Leela Ma, you like to read them?
Having stated both you, our parents, and we have suffered because of our separation, Krishna now states that his and Balarama's religious principles have been spoiled by the failure to satisfy the parents.
Any points there?
How does Krishna make these statements when Nanda Maharaj is also there and still balance that rasa which Nanda Maharaj also has? Because now he is talking to Devaki and Vasudeva that we could not repay our debt to you as parents, but you know Nanda Maharaj is also present there, which means that he is Krishna's father. So how do you balance this without Nanda Maharaj also not feeling that, oh, I'm losing my son or something?
This will come out in the next few verses. So yeah, we'll discuss that. Anything else?
I have a question.
What is that?
This debt of parents says that
Krishna just said it right there.
Yeah, you may not have much common with your parents. So how do you?
Krishna just said you have a debt.
Yeah, that's what I'm struggling with. You know,
you're struggling with it.
No,
are you from India?
Yes, I am.
Anyone here from India? Anyone struggle with this point? Debt to parents. This is one of the big features of Vedic culture. I see so many of the devotees, practically everyone in this room that I'm looking at, practically, Indian body especially, then there's some pastime taking place with the parents. It's an interesting point. Satsarup Maharaj, who wrote the Prabhupada's Leelamrita, he wrote many years ago in Back to Godhead, he said there are so many tattvas in this world. Vishnu tattva, Shakti tattva, Jiva tattva, Shiva tattva, parent tattva. He said parent tattva has its own tattva. It has its own circumstance. It's like Shiva tattva, actually. Shiva tattva is a little extraordinary. So parent tattva is also like that. Because now we're devotees, it changes everything. But at the same time, you still have some obligation. So now it's like a juggling act, or it's like a fine line to balance between how much for the parents and how much for Krishna. So you have to keep it as balanced as you can. You see in Prabhupada's pastimes, in Prabhupada's Leela, when Prabhupada initiated Brahmananda and Gargamuni, who were two of his very first disciples, 1966 practically. 66, 67. So he initiated them. They were Italian. Italians are fairly similar to Indians. There's nothing like India. India's on its own. But the Italians are something similar. And they have a similar kind of mood. South Americans also, and Middle Easterns. It's also like that. Similar. So they had like strong relationship with the mother. So she came for the initiation ceremony and Prabhupada initiated. And then after the initiation, then they circumambulated Prabhupada, Brahmananda Gargamuni, and then Prabhupada said, now also circumambulate your mother. So they went and they circumambulated their mother. And he said, offer your obeisances to the mother. He said, you should offer obeisances to your mother because she's your first guru. So then they offered obeisances. And then Brahmananda Prabhu said, whenever he went to visit his mother for the next year or so, every time he'd knock on the door and then she'd open the door, he'd be offering obeisances to her. So she thought that was very strange. Why are you doing like that? But Prabhupada gave that instruction, so he was following literally. So the point is there, you do have an obligation to parents, to mother and father. There is an obligation. But Bhagavatam has said, much earlier on, earlier cantos, that you can give up obligation to everyone if you surrender to Krishna. So now we have to find that balance. Because if we're surrendered to Krishna, we don't have an obligation. But because we're in the material world and, you know, there are relationships that you need to oblige them to whatever degree is necessary. So the best thing is to make them into devotees, which we cannot fully control. But we have to encourage them. Just like actually on Friday night, I had a preaching program. So once a month, I do a preaching program down in Torquay, near our farm, mainly for Western people. And we call it Meditation Hut. And it's at my mother's house. My mother does that service. So we go to her house. So she was there. She attends. And I said, any questions? And she actually put her hand up. I said, yes, Mataji. What would you like to ask? And she actually said to me, she said, what is the purpose of life? Like that. And I said, well, I've told you, you know, hundreds of times. But, you know, I could see there was some genuine asking. So I said, okay. So I gave her the philosophy and I said, you can't enjoy in this material world. You can't enjoy your family, all these things. She knows it, but she's getting the realization. She's been to Vrindavan with me. I took her to Mayapur, Puri, Vrindavan. You know, she's done a lot of service over the years. You know, she's a very nice person. She met my Guru Maharaj many times. He liked her very much. So, you know, nice person. So it's like it's a tattva there. You have to satisfy. We have obligation, right? But at the same time, our main obligation is to Krishna. So as long as the material relationship does not overshadow the spiritual relationship, then you can oblige it. But if it is interfering with the spiritual relationship, then you can reject it. Then there is no reaction. So it's a very fine line. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his pastimes, when he came to this earth, he showed us the way to perform our obligations in this world. Just like when his father passed away, he went to Gaya to perform the Shraddha ceremony, Pindam. So he went there to perform the ceremony. So actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, comments that he went there, but he did not need to do that, because he's Bhagavan Sri Krishna. He is the Supreme Lord. Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Radha Krishna Nahiyani. He's no different from Krishna. He is Krishna. So he doesn't need to go and do a Shraddha ceremony. But he was showing us that when we're in this world, then you have obligations. So you do the obligations. But only if they don't cover your bhakti. He went to Gaya, but what was his main purpose to go to Gaya? He took initiation from Ishwarapuri, his guru. That's really why he was there. And what was his main activity while he was there? He was given Harinam initiation. So his main activity while in Gaya was chanting the holy name. And then he did the pinda, he did the ceremony. But the main reason was to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. That overrides everything. So Krishna is saying here, you have to do your obligation to your parents, but only if it doesn't overshadow your bhakti. So, any point?
I thought that Lord Krishna was saying he always comes to establish the religious principle, and I think he was hinting them to send them to Gurukul.
Yeah, Gurukul is coming up later in the chapter.
I said that was his
tomorrow night he will go to Gurukul. Anything else?
So, if the parents are devotee parents and they have encouraging their child to become Krishna conscious, then there's no problem.
No, you should reject them.
No, how I should be rejected? Krishna conscious parents.
You can say, this is all Maya, this is all illusory. Don't argue with your teacher.
Chaitanya Mahaprabhu even accepts his obligation with his mother. Like, on the request of his mother, he does not settle down in Vrindavan, but is going to settle down in Vrindavan. So, even at that stage, even though he was a sannyasi, he was still respecting his mother's wishes.
That was because of prema. Because that shows that prema overrides mundane dharma. Because normally a sannyasi should not do that. Because then it's not sannyas. I'm a sannyasi, but I do whatever my mother says. that's not sannyas. But her prema was so strong. Same as you see with Krishna, like when Mother Yashoda looked into the mouth. Right, but the prema overwhelmed everything else. Yeah? So Mother Sachi's prema was so powerful, he had to make some adjustment. Because the prema was so powerful. Because that's the eternal relationship. The sannyas was just an external, you know, that was just a pastime in this, you know, there's no sannyas in the spiritual world. In Goloka, Mahaprabhu doesn't take sannyas. Yeah.
So he should have
Yeah. Yeah, always. He's a prince of the brahmanas, Dwijamani. Like that. He always has hair. You know, all the shaving, that's only in this material world. That's just a pastime in this material world, that's all. The prema overrode the pastime. Because he was a very strict sannyasi, very strict. But the prema was so powerful and he became subjugated and he made some adjustments so that everything stayed as it should, but at the same time he could perform his duty as sannyasi and perform his eternal duty to his mother.
And that way his eternal duty.
Yeah, so there's many reasons. Two rooms in the same house. Chaitanya Charitamrita says. Anything else?
See, Sati Mother's love was so powerful that Chaitanya was small, that she could see all the dangers and everything coming to visit him. But when she used to call her husband, he never used to see anything. Mm-hmm.
He used to see things as well. He also saw things. Maybe in that pastime, yeah. But he also saw things. The problem with you women is you always think you're superior all the time.
No, yeah,
ask it, is it true? They always think they're better, right?
It's like, I don't know, I'm staying out of
this. Because the gopis at the top mostly think, oh, we're better. And
I think the men
has
got more positive.
Oh, now. It's not funny. A son who, though able to do so, fails to provide for his parents with his physical resources and wealth, is forced after his death to eat his own flesh. Mm-hmm. Put that one on the wall of your house. I'll make this one a KMV. This next verse is very nice. Verse number 7. A man who, though able to do so, fails to support his elderly parents, chaste wife, young child, or spiritual master, or who neglects a brahmana or anyone who comes to him for shelter, is considered dead though breathing. So this is called dharma. Dharma means you have obligations in this world. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Raghunath Das Goswami, he wanted to leave everything. Wife, children, not children, but wife, parents, everything. And Mahaprabhu said, don't act like a fool. He said, stay in your position, do everything perfectly. Be like a perfect son, a perfect husband, all those things. Do everything perfectly. But in your heart, you always meditate on Krishna. And when the time is right, Krishna will deliver you from all of these things. And that's what happened. 2 years he stayed, did all his obligations, and then the path was open and he ran to, literally, to Jagannath Puri and joined Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
So people who are not very much advanced,
yeah, we should do. We should do. In other words, there'll be reactions. You know, if the wife is good or the husband is good, you can't reject. You know, like in the modern world, they reject. Someone's good. In my own family, I saw. You know, my uncle left the auntie and everything. She was good. And no reason. Even my father did like that. He left my mother. You know, no reason. Good person. So if you do that, you get serious reaction. Right? So if you neglect the wife, the husband, the child, the guru, the parents, all those things, it means as long as you're in this world, you have a material body, you have obligations. Right? And that is not contrary to bhakti, to oblige those obligations or to fulfill those obligations. If they are overwhelming your bhakti, okay, then you can lessen the commitment. Yeah, but if it does not, then okay. In other words, the devotee has to stay in control, which is not easy. Yeah, just like my mother, I've said many times, you know, I came home, I was 19, and then I came here actually to this temple first time, and then I came home and I walked in. I said, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna. And she said, you know, what are you talking about? I said, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna. And then she walked into my room. I was on the floor chanting japa, Hare Krishna, Hare. And she looked like look of terror on her face. What are you doing? And then she started saying to me, what are you doing to your mother? Why are you doing this? You cannot do this. I'm losing you, all these things. I said, I'm doing this, right? And I just went and did it, became a devotee. And now she's very supportive. Right? So you don't let them dominate your life. That's the point. If they will be assisting, or they'll be obliging, or they'll be supportive, then we'll include them. If they cannot, then it makes it difficult.
And we see Bhagavatam constantly showing us these examples of how material obligations should not be rejected. Even your devotees like Guru Maharaj and Prahlad Maharaj both were concerned about their.
Yeah, good point. Even your Guru Maharaj, he said, you know, especially my desire is my parents become devotees. So he said to his disciples, you preach to them and you help them become devotees. So that was his personal desire. Prabhupada himself, when Prabhupada left this world, he left a will. And he left because Prabhupada was very wealthy. Prabhupada was like a multi-millionaire. You know, if you add up his cons, well, multi-millionaire. So he left a significant amount of money to his children. He left quite a lot of money to his children. You know, because out of obligation, he gave them. And then when Prabhupada left, one of the sons took ISKCON to court and said, actually, he's my father, so I own ISKCON. He lost. He did not win the battle, but he took us to court. He got greedy because Prabhupada knew the mentality. So Prabhupada gave him nice donation, nice inheritance. Yeah, gave nice, but still he was greedy, so he tried to get more, but did not work. So Prabhupada was doing all the things. And actually, interesting, he came to see Prabhupada in the final months when Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and Prabhupada was crying. As his father was crying, right? And he said, actually, the fault was not with your mother. Because he thought the son would have some bad feeling that he took sannyas and left the family. And Prabhupada was crying, and Prabhupada said, actually, the fault was not with your mother, it was with me. I was very stubborn. He said, your mother was good, but I was very stubborn. Prabhupada was crying. Mm-hmm. You know, the fault was with the wife, it wasn't Prabhupada. You know, she said, tea or me. And Prabhupada said, okay. Yeah. But Prabhupada tried to keep the family together. But when it became too difficult, then he left. So, In other words, Prabhupada showed us we should fulfill our material obligations as much as you can. Okay? Good. I'll never be happy anyway. Even if you try to make them happy, they're never happy anyway. You give them so much time and energy and everything, but they always want more. And so it doesn't work anyway. Just keep them as happy as you can. I give them this example. You know when you're cooking, right? On the front, you cook the main things. On the back, you have the chutney or something. You know, we say on the back burner. So your parents and everything, that's like that. Your main thing is Krishna. At the back, you just stir it once in a while. Make sure it doesn't burn. Your parents are like that. Yeah, once in a while, just, you know. Okay. Keep them happy. You know. Put some salt in or some, a little bit of cardamom or something else. Okay. TK? Understood. Thus we have wasted all these days, unable as we were to properly honor you, because our minds were always disturbed by fear of Kamsa. So obviously that's not true. Krishna was actually waiting to come to Mathura because he wanted to give Kamsa a gift. The gift was his fist. He was actually relishing. Like today, you know, Maharaj had Vyasa Puja. So disciples, they fast half day. So then, you know, say Janmashtami, you fast. You know, by midnight feast, you're pretty enthusiastic for that feast. So it said when Krishna came to Mathura, he was like that with Kamsa. You know, he was waiting. He could not wait to see him. He was ready. Like he'd been fasting for a long time. Now I'm going to get this guy and I'm going to get him. Like seriously, Krishna was ready to get him. So he's saying here, out of fear, but there was no fear. Dear Father and Mother, please forgive us for not serving you. We are not independent and have been greatly frustrated by cruel Kamsa. Shukadev Goswami said, thus beguiled by the words of Lord Hari, the supreme soul of the universe, who by his internal illusory potency appeared to be a human, his parents joyfully raised him up on their laps and embraced him. So this is because Yogamaya took control. Yogamaya covered Devaki, Vasudev. They took Krishna and Balaram and put Krishna and Balaram on their laps. Before they were like, yeah. And then now they're bringing, because Yogamaya is covered, and now they're seeing these are our children. So Vatsalya Ras. Pouring out a shower of tears upon the Lord, his parents, who were bound up by the rope of affection, could not speak. They were overwhelmed, O King, and their throats choked up with tears. Thus, having comforted his mother and father, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appearing as the son of Devaki, installed his maternal grandfather, Ugrasena, as king of the Yadus. So Nanda Maharaj was not there at this point. Nanda Maharaj had gone back out of the city to the camp, and he was staying with the cowherd men. Because the rasa is different with Nanda Maharaj. So now he's satisfied. That's why he came to Mathura, because his family members, they needed satisfaction. So he's come to Mathura to satisfy Vasudev Devaki. Nanda Maharaj is pulling away because he's thinking, now they're safe. Kamsa's dead. They are safe. They came here to gratify their family. So let them spend some time. I'll go back with the cowherd men. But the relationship with Nanda Maharaj is far, far, far superior to this.
Actually, I heard Krishna had to take the help of Yogamaya as well to convince, and then Varaha to go.
Yeah, maybe.
Because he didn't want to leave.
Yeah, he did not want to leave. The Lord told him, O mighty king, we are your subjects, so please command us. Indeed, because of the curse of Yayati, no Yadu may sit on the royal throne. So there's no curse that binds Krishna or a pure devotee. We see in the pastime of Parikshit, when Parikshit was cursed by Sringi, that curse did not actually bind the pure devotee. Right? Normally, if you get a curse, you're bound by the curse. A pure devotee, and especially Krishna, they're not bound. So Krishna has no curse on him. He can sit on the throne, but there's a curse that the Yadus could not become the ruling dynasty of the earth. You know? Their cousins, the Kurus. That's why Yudhishthira was the king. Because Mathura and Hastinapura are very close. How close is Hastinapura and Mathura?
90 miles.
90 miles? Is it all?
2 hours.
Yeah. Yeah, in a car. Yeah. Is that only 90 miles, isn't it?
Yeah.
From Delhi to Mathura?
Yeah.
Is it? Okay. So, between Delhi and Mathura. So the Kurus were there, the Yadus were there. They had their capital, and they had their capital. They were cousins. Right? But the curse was there, so only they could rule, the Kurus. So the Yadu king would never rule. Yayati gave that curse. But Krishna is not obliged to follow the curse, but because, you know, Yayati was a devotee and he said it, then Krishna maintains Yayati's words. So Krishna does not take the throne. So then he says, Ugrasen, you take the throne, we will protect you. So because Krishna is there, then he's unconquerable. We'll see that in the next verse. Yeah, there's a history. Anyone know the history? The curse of Yayati? I can't remember the details. It's there. If I see it by tomorrow, when I'm preparing tomorrow's class, it may come up in some of the things I read. So, if it's there, otherwise, just do some search. That'll be there. There's a curse there. Since I am present in your entourage as your personal attendant, all the demigods and other exalted personalities will come with heads bowed to offer you tribute. What then to speak of the rulers of men? So because Krishna is the servant of Ugrasen, all the demigods will come and they will bow. Because Krishna is there. And they understand Krishna is the most powerful member of the Yadu dynasty. He's unconquerable. And we'll see as the next year, if Krishna allows us to study the Bhagavatam, we will see Krishna goes to Swaga, takes the Parijata, right? And then Indra fights him, right? Indra bows before him, right? Then later on there's a fight between Krishna and Shiva, right? The Yadu dynasty, they fight with the Devatas, right? Kartikeya fights with, who does he fight with? Was it Prajumna? I mean, very, very, very powerful demigods. The Yadus go, they take that, what's it called, that assembly hall? Sudama. Yeah, Indra has a like assembly hall, like a hall where everyone meets, and they hear, the Yadus hear about it on Earth, and they said, "Let's go and get that. We'll go and get that for Krishna." So they all go up to heaven, they pick it up, and the demigods say, "You're not taking this," and they said, "Okay, let's fight, let's work this out." You know, sometimes we say, "Step outside," you know. So they go, big fight, and then they pick it up, they take it, put it into Walker. There's many fights. So you'll see now, because of Krishna's presence, the Yadus are unconquerable. So he says to Ugrasen, he said, you just rule and don't worry about anything. Now, demigod, no one will harass you. Everyone will come, they'll just bow down. Yeah? And also shows Krishna's position as Bhaktivatsala. right? The Bhagavad Gita, right? Krishna is the chariot driver of Partha, Arjuna. So in the same way, I mean, Krishna can take the throne. You know, Krishna, I am Supreme Lord. I am God. You know, I can take the throne. But no, he thinks, let Ugrasen take the throne. He's my grandfather. I'll just be the prince. That's Krishna's mood. We have to learn that mood, actually. Our mood, too much of the time, is we have to be the one at the front. You know, like Maharaj is up there, Vyasa Puja. Disciples are like, you know, jockeying for position. You know, sometimes we serve like that, always trying to get to the front. Actually, the mood of the devotees, when we become purified, is to just assist the other. And Krishna's like that. Krishna could take over, but he thinks, no, I'll just serve Ugrasen.
So maybe inspiring to
the Yeah, Gyana gives nice offerings. The Lord then brought all his close family members and other relatives back from the various places to which they had fled in fear of Kamsa. He received the Yadus, Vrishnis, Andakas, Madhus, Dashahas, Kukuras, and other clans with due honor, and he also consoled them, for they were wary of living in foreign lands. Then Lord Krishna, the creator of the universe, resettled them in their homes and gratified them with valuable gifts. The members of these clans, protected by the arms of Lord Krishna and Lord Sankarsana, felt that all their desires were fulfilled. They thus enjoyed perfect happiness while living at home with their families. Because of the presence of Krishna and Balaram, they no longer suffered from the fever of material existence. Every day these loving devotees could see Mukunda's ever-cheerful lotus face, which was decorated with beautiful, merciful, smiling glances. Even the most elderly inhabitants of the city appeared youthful, full of strength and vitality, for with their eyes they constantly drank the elixir of Lord Mukunda's lotus face. So if you associate with Krishna, you will feel youthful. Just like Prabhupada. Prabhupada was 79, right? And still walking quickly. And one time Prabhupada jumped up from behind his desk. He said, I will never get old. He's like 79 or something. Just jumps up and says, I will never get old. But then a year later, Prabhupada was getting older. You know, then he slipped. He said, now I'm getting old. Because of the material body. But in his spirit, actually Prabhupada said, he said, sometimes I look at my hand and I'm shocked. Oh, it is an old man's hand. He said, in my heart I feel like a boy. You know, Prabhupada, youthful. So if you serve Krishna, you will feel youthful. In front of the Jagannath.
The theatre.
Yeah.
Marble Arch.
Yeah, and here in Melbourne, he walked all the way down Swanston Street. Kilometres, Prabhupada walked for. And then when he went to, I think he went back to India, and then he was telling everyone, he said, I walk for miles. Mm-hmm. He said, I danced in front of Jagannath for miles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so much energy when he was. Yeah. I don't know what happened to us. We're not even old yet, and we're all out of energy. Yeah. We feel totally fatigued and tired and like that. Prabhupada was just like empowered. Not Krishna. Then, O exalted Parikshit, the Supreme Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, along with Lord Balaram, approached Nanda Maharaj. The two lords embraced him and then addressed him as follows. So they went to Nanda Maharaj outside the city. They've gone out and he's in the camp. They're taking care of Devaki, but it's like it's different rasas. So he deals with Devaki and Vasudev, but now he wants to see Nanda Maharaj, so he keeps things separate because the rasa is different. And as soon as he comes, actually when they see Nanda Maharaj, they're going to bow down, touch his feet. You know, you touch your father's feet. But Nanda Maharaj just jumps up and just grabs them and just pulls them to his chest, the two boys. There's so much love. Whereas before Devaki and Vasudev, they were like, you know, awe and reverence. He just grabs them with love. Krishna and Balaram said, O Father, you and Mother Yashoda have affectionately maintained us and cared for us so much. Indeed, parents love their children more than their own lives. They are the real father and mother who care for, as they would their own sons, children abandoned by relatives, unable to maintain and protect them. So this is the intrinsic point of Vrindavan. Why are the relationships in Vrindavan higher than the relationships outside of Vrindavan? Okay. Because there is no sambandha. Sambandha means relationship, right? Actual blood relation. Actually, I mean, if we get deeply philosophical and everything, actually he is the son. But at least in terms of the lila, right? He is said to be the son of Vasudeva and Devaki. So with the gopis, there's no sambandha. He's not married, right? So there's no actual relationship, right? But their love for him is so intense, right? The cowherd boys, right? There's no actual relationship. They're just friends, right? Not bound by a family relationship. And the parents, they're, how do you say, foster parents. So there's no actual relationship. That's why Vrindavan is considered higher, because there's no sambandha in Vrindavan. And yet Krishna's attachment is more to the Brijbasis than to the others, who are the actual family, apparently. That's why Vrindavan is considered the highest. Shri Vrindavan Dharma Ki. Now you shall all return to Braj, dear father. We shall come to see you, our dear relatives who suffer in separation from us, as soon as we have given some happiness to your well-wishing friends. So Krishna convinces Nanda Maharaj, we will come back soon. And actually, Bhagavatam doesn't mention, but tomorrow night, someone send me a text tomorrow and remind me, and I'll bring Krishna Sangati and I'll explain it to you. Krishna comes back many times. Right? He comes many times to Vrindavan. It's not like he never goes back. Bhagavatam says he doesn't go back, but he does go back. Thus consoling Nanda Maharaj and the other men of Braj, the infallible Supreme Lord respectfully honored them with gifts of clothing, jewelry, household utensils, and so on. So basically he's telling them, my mind is always in Vrindavan. Even though he appears to be in Mathura and he's happy, actually he's not happy at all. Right? There's descriptions where it says he gets up on the, how would you describe it, like the balconies, high up. And on the balconies he looks towards Vrindavan, he sees the forest, and he looks across, right? And he just cries silently to himself. And he's just thinking of Srimati Radharani and how much she must be feeling separation from him. Right? So he just cries. So even though he's there and he's with all the family, he doesn't feel happy actually. But he can't go back because he knows Jarasandha and others are going to attack. And if he goes and lives in Nanda Maharaj, the armies will come into Braj, destroy Vrindavan, the cows could get harmed. So that's why he's staying in Mathura, just to distract the Jarasandha and everyone from Vrindavan. So tomorrow night we'll finish the chapter. Srila Prabhupada Ki.